I've traveled every road in Pennsylvania. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. I've crossed the valley stair, man. I've been the mountain.
Welcome to Bride's Curve. So happy for you to join us.
Are we recording?
Welcome to Bride's Curve, PA.
Welcome to Bride's Curve, PA.
The show is about to start. We just have a couple of quick things to say beforehand.
Little
housekeeping, exactly.
Housekeeping details.
New season. Season 4.
Season 4.
It's here.
You're in it.
Yeah, it started. Season 4. You're listening to it. You're a part of it now. Season 4.
If they're watching this later, they're actually time traveling back to now, to the beginning of season 4.
Yes, they are now joining us on this lovely Wednesday morning.
Now we can add sci-fi to our genres.
Yes, absolutely. We're getting a little off the rails here, though.
I think that's on brand.
That's on brand. Season 4, we're doing the 2021 elections. Very exciting opportunity year. And then we're going to shift into the 2022 cycle.
Yep.
God willing.
Yep. God willing. And, you know, there's still, if you've never heard us before, there's our typical, we like to call it artisanal podcasting, or sometimes, you know, brain to ear, just like, you know,
yes.
Farm to fork. So we're all about fostering great conversations with each other and with guests. Sometimes people who are coming out for the first time, sometimes people who do lots of great work all over Pennsylvania around progressive politics and social change. And you know, this started 4 years ago, in this very house, in another room, I think.
No, actually, our first podcast was at Iron Front co-working space.
Oh, right. We better cut this.
Which is, they don't do co-working anymore, but a fabulous event space in downtown Lewisburg. Check it out.
Maybe they'll sponsor us.
Maybe they'll sponsor us. Yeah, so we're excited for these new programs. You can support us by joining us on Patreon. And for as little as $2 a month, you can access our whole back catalog. We'll thank you on every episode.
Every episode until we get enough people supporting us.
Yeah.
It'll be like one of those auditory brick walks where people's names are.
Yeah, and then we also will have a shindig every year, and you will get an invite. So support us on Patreon. Or you could just donate on PayPal if you wanted to do a lump sum and not some a recurring donation.
You can find those links on our website, which is barnstormingpa.org. It's always barnstormingpa. Also in the show notes, if you're listening to this on any of the fine podcasting platforms. There's other levels of support on Patreon, and we've got some great merch and swag that are coming, some stickers, t-shirts. At the highest level is some, you know, special local cuisine, you know, at the highest level of giving. Well, that sounded weird, like you're going to get some scrapple. I'll make you a paella.
Yeah, a PA.
A PA paella.
Okay. Well, I think the music's coming to a close, and without further ado, here's the show.
You know, what are the cheapest places?
That's a genius,
right?
I have a friend who owns a cheesesteak place, so I'm watching. I'm biased, like a judge needs to be.
I'm very, like, recently there was this whole thing about Altoona Pizza. I don't know if you saw this, which is, and even they were like, how dare they? I'm like, look, if it tastes good, let people eat it. Maybe, you know, maybe it shouldn't be called pizza, but, like, you know, you don't have to like it. This whole, I'm more into sort of celebrating every kind of food.
Exactly.
I don't love cheese whiz, but if you like it on your cheese, then go for it.
Yeah. I just love food, so it doesn't matter.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, take it away, Taylor.
Okay. Welcome to Barnstorming. My name is Taylor Lightman, one of your co-hosts here. Barnstorming PA, we're a podcast about politics and culture and in Pennsylvania broadly, but I mean Jordy and I are from Lewisburg, so it's a little
sad focus. I'm from Lewisburg. You're from Winfield.
We're just splitting hairs now. You've heard him. You know him, you love him. My co-host.
Thanks, everybody.
Jordy
Thanks,
Comas.
Taylor. Yes, this is Jordy Comas. Among the different hats I wear, Judge McLaughlin, maybe I should have told you this. I was one of the 18 petitioners in the League of Women Voters versus Pennsylvania case. That was fascinating in 2018. But I think I'm one of the two people who enjoyed being deposed because the lawyer for the Public Interest Law Center told me, you know, it's on their dime. And I said, can I talk as much as I want? She said, sure. It was like Friday afternoon. This attorney for Scarnati or Terzaghi or one of them, you know, was like, well, you know, how, tell us how gerrymandering has affected you and your feelings about democracy. Is like, well, when I was 16, you know, I started it. Like, 3 hours later, this guy was like, it's Friday. I just want to get out of here.
And so we should say that this is the case that redrew the congressional
right,
maps.
Redrew the congressional maps. Yeah. Right. So anyway, that was too much of a wind up. So we are pleased to have Judge Maria McLaughlin, who's currently a justice on the Pennsylvania. I have to be careful about this Superior Court, and it's running for the Supreme Court. Welcome, Judge McLaughlin.
Thank you for having me. Happy to be here.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to have you. We're doing a series on our judicial races in Pennsylvania in 2021. And the more Jordy and I look into this, these races, there are four races, one for Supreme Court, one for Superior Court, and then two races for Commonwealth Court. The more we look into this, the more both Jordy and I feel like these races are perhaps the most important races in the country, but certainly the most important races in Pennsylvania that are happening right now. And thank you for running and thank you for being here.
Thank you for bringing plus one in that. And do you want to comment on that first?
I agree with you. I mean, we don't need to look any further than last year to see what branch of the government saved our democracy. And it was certainly the judiciary. And so, look, I have only ever run for judge in the course of my career. So I'm used to the odd year elections. I don't like to say off year.
We like to say opportunity year.
Right. And I mean, and so I'm used to the lower interest, but this year, I think it's different. And I think it's because of last year that this year should be different. And I'm so grateful to podcasts and to any kind of medium that brings attention to these important elections, because I'm at the top of the ticket. And if you're not the governor or a Senate, it seems like you're overlooked until you're needed. And so I just want to make sure that people know there's an election, number one, November 2nd. There is an election, and I am running at the top of your ticket as your Supreme Court nominee. So thank you for bringing that attention.
No, absolutely. And, you know, I just want to, if people didn't hear some of our other interviews with the Commonwealth judges, and we'll get to the candidate for Superior Court. Judges races are odd for those of us who do, you know, politics, because the candidates, as I understand it, are bound by certain codes of ethics. So they're not, which makes sense to me, they're not going to talk about any past case or future case, which of course, you know, we want judges who can be as impartial as possible. And you're also not supposed to attack the other candidates or something like that.
So yeah, we're to a higher standard than we should be.
And you should be, but in terms of helping voters, I'm thinking about from voter perspective, and I'm just saying this in an observational way, it's like these candidates who are among the most skilled and intelligent people we have in our society, who are doing one of the hardest jobs, are left to run on only I'm a good person, right? It's just kind of a weird election. So we really like to kind of, as best we can, give these candidates a chance to talk about why, you know, because I do actually think voting for judges matters, but why this person is important, right? Why Judge McLaughlin is important in this case. And the other thing I'll say, so there's odd elections. The other thing I've been trying to say recently is, if anybody's thinking about 2022 and the Senate and the gubernatorial races and Pennsylvania are huge, don't talk to me or don't talk about 2022 unless the first thing out of your mouth is an introductory phrase. It's like, make sure you vote in 2021.
Yeah, because talking about 2022 is like putting the cart before the horse, because there will certainly be challenges to the process in 2022. And
challenges that will probably be ruled on probabilistically by these courts.
Yeah. So without further ado, let's get into it. I think we should just start off, Judge, if you wouldn't mind just telling us a little bit about your background, where you're from and how you grew up. And I know, you know, just looking at your ads, you know, your parents and where you're from weigh heavily on your worldview.
Y muy bien por tener el video con los subtítulos en español, fantástico. Really love the Spanish subtitle.
And I look, it's very important to me to have my website and everything in both English and Spanish. My son is very fluent in Italian, and so it's very close to Spanish. And so he's almost now fluent in Spanish as well. But the fact that I am where I am today is just nowhere I ever thought I would be, dreamed I would be, nor my parents never thought or dreamed, because I came from humble beginnings and my parents were uneducated. So the most important thing for them was that I had a college degree. I was the first one in my family to have it. It was a huge deal. It wasn't easy for me. It wasn't easy for them to get that college degree. I worked 3 part-time jobs and I had a partial cheerleading scholarship to Penn State. And it is the only reason that I had a college degree. And so then I worked those same jobs and went to law school. And when I graduated law school, I had a number of options, but I chose to serve. And so I think also when you're looking at, you know, who you want to elect, me or my opponent, and what paths we took and different paths, I think that's where you should start looking. I chose to serve. I had a huge amount of student loan debt despite working 3 part-time jobs in the scholarship. And I chose to make $24,000 a year in the district attorney's office fighting for kids. That was my choice and my path. And so because I felt like I should give something back, you know, no one had a college degree, even though I had to work for it. It was a privilege. Still, there are people who don't have that privilege, and I did. So I never forgot that and gave back. And so from there, I went on to the district attorney's office fighting for kids, where I spent 6 years, never missed a day of work, never had a decision overturned. And then I went and said, look.
Can we pause there for a second? Yeah. How unusual is that about? Because I think, you know, what that means is that you are making good choices about cases that can be successfully prosecuted.
Extremely proud of that record, and it's extremely rare, especially in Philadelphia. I sit in the largest judicial district, and doing criminal and family law cases, they're the 2 of the most appealed cases to the Superior Court. I know that because I'm on the Superior Court now. And so, you know, never having a decision overturned, I've made thousands and thousands of decisions in 6 years, and I never shied away from a hard one. And so I believe that my life experiences and how I've ruled, the judges agree with that. People agree with that. And so I was never overturned, and that's a big deal.
And also because we have the luxury of, you know, a little bit longer time on the podcast than, you know, you're used to people saying, tell us everything in 3 minutes. So when you were growing up in Philadelphia, you know, it seems like, you know, why do people get attracted to the law? I mean, was there a moment, you know, when you were in middle school or high school, or was there some, you know, a mentor or somebody, you know, was there a moment, or was it just something that evolved over time?
I really didn't have experience with lawyers or judges or anybody. And so my mother and father always just said that, you know, they always knew I was going to do something with my mouth and arguing, because I always like to argue. You know, from then, you know, we would come from an Italian family and my family would go to mass and my grandmother's. Nope, you didn't have a conversation about it. It's what you did. You know, it's not like today where we discuss with our kids things. We went to mass and we went to my grandmother's, and the women, I had 2 aunts that were nuns, and the women would cook and clean and the men sat there. And I'll never forget, I was probably around 12 years old. And I said, I have a younger brother, and unless he gets up, I'm not getting up. And I will never forget that my mother, who, you know, she wasn't that brave, not like I am, but boy, in her life, was she brave, but not with answering back. And so she stood with me and she was like, you know what? You're right, honey. And you don't have to if he doesn't. And I'll never forget that she stood up for me then. And I, you know, I don't know if that's something that back then you can look at, but that's just about it. Just that I like to argue.
My mom's favorite trick is she'll introduce me to her friend. She'll be like, this is my son, Jordy. He's very argumentative, before I've even said anything. So if I disagree with her, I've just proven my point.
That's great. I think something that's very interesting about like, you know, you have a very well constructed like campaign, and I think something that like you get whether it's the 15-second ad or just now that we're talking in longer form, is just your background. Your background is just so much, you know, like you really care that work has dignity and that everybody should have a voice, and people that are, no matter in what position they are, if they're, you know, a judge or somebody on the bench or somebody that's in front of the court, needs to have that, that perspective. And I think that's very clear from what you've talked about, just the importance of the dignity of work.
I think it's important. And I always say, if I didn't learn something every day, it would be a boring day. And it doesn't matter who I learn it from, whether it's one of my law clerks, whether it's one of my colleagues, whether it's another judge, another person that works in the lobby of my building, or somebody I meet on the street. It doesn't matter. And that's how I was brought up, to never forget where you come from. And, you know, to just, I think when you have real life experiences, it's really easy to keep yourself grounded and humble. I'm a good judge. I was a good family court judge because I had my own struggles. You know, I went through a divorce. I went through custody with my children. And so these things, I think, make you a better person when you're judging someone, right? And so, you know, people would say, you know, a lot of times to me, judge, you know, you let people, you know, get a little out of hand in your courtroom sometimes when I was a trial judge. And I would say, never. Never. There's a difference between disrespect and letting people show their emotions. You know, when I'm having to make a tough decision and taking somebody's child away from them for their own welfare, because maybe they're struggling with a drug addiction, well, then let them yell at me. It's okay. I get it. They're not yelling out of disrespect. They're not in a good place. And so I think when you can realize that and everybody's just a real person, I think your decisions mean more, you're a better judge, and you're a better representative of all of us, right? Because all of us have had our struggles, and you can't forget that, you know, just because now you're in a position of authority.
I think that's really well said. Why are you running for... Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to follow up on one thing about that, because I think the answer you just gave probably also, you know, is helpful for another question that I think is important. Just like we hear judges... sometimes, you know, they use this kind of catchphrase that I'm only going to interpret the law. I'm not going to, you know, make laws from the bench. And I find that kind of a little insulting to people, you know, and the intelligence of the voter, because if it were so simple as to only apply the law, you wouldn't need a judge, you know, like you wouldn't need a judge. So the whole thing is that laws, you know, and I'm on my borough council, which I don't try and elevate, but it is literally making laws. So, you know, we can think about this parking thing and try and imagine which scenarios it does or doesn't apply to, but we're not going to hit all of them, right? So the world is a messier, more complex place than any law can account for. So that's why we have judges, right? Do you want, you know, because so the thing you were saying about letting people be people, yeah, seems to me like a kind of, you know,
well, sure, because I think there are these little code words that, you know, people like to use, you know, and I always say, I don't legislate from the bench, never did. Don't want to. If I wanted to be a legislator, I would run for the legislature. It's not what I want to do. And the Constitution, I've upheld the Constitution my entire 29-year legal career. So I don't know what anybody wants to say with those code words, but you would be remiss if you didn't think that you don't bring your life experiences with you to the bench and that they are not necessary and don't come out in your opinions. First of all, every time I write an opinion, it never matters what level of the judiciary I was in. You know, my dad never got to see me become a judge, but my mother did. My mother got to see me become a judge and a Superior Court judge. And so I always knew that it didn't matter that she didn't have a college degree, and she maybe wouldn't understand all the legalese in my opinions, but I always wrote my opinions knowing that I wanted my mother and somebody like her to be able to understand what I meant in that decision. And so I never forget that. Everybody who reads my opinion will know what I meant. They're not going to have to ask somebody to interpret that decision. They're going to know from my decision. And so that's important to me. And not every judge is like that.
Yeah. No, that's great. That's excellent. So I think we were going to ask you about... well, Taylor, are you good? So
yeah.
Okay. Were you going to ask about why run for Superior?
Why are you running for Supreme Court?
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm running for Supreme Court just for the same reason I've always run for anything, to do better. You know, I feel like I am in a position to do better. And so, you know, this is a time, our Supreme Court, first of all, if you want just a practical answer, is our Supreme Court's young. Look at the ages on our Supreme Court. There's going to be two openings for the next very many years. And this year, it's required for Justice Thaler to retire because he's 75, and Justice Baer will be in 23, required to retire. And so that's a practical thing. There's only going to be two openings. Why did I choose this one, despite it being so hard? I did it for a reason. I was the top vote getter just 4 years ago out of 9 candidates, Democrats and Republicans alike. And if I wasn't the top vote getter and I didn't spend time in all 67 counties making relationships, I wouldn't be in this election. So that's why I chose. The reason that I believe I could be a great justice beyond being the only one that's ready to go from day one is because I know I can do better. And it's the same reason I did anything. It's the same reason I went into the district attorney's office. It's the same reason I ran for judge the first time. It's the same reason I'm running for Superior Court and now Supreme. And so that's really the reason. And the practical reason is the timing. We have to be honest. I mean, it is timing.
Seems like maybe the federal government could learn something from Pennsylvania about a mandatory retirement age for judges. Because that makes a lot of sense to me. I know I was gonna say, could you kind of explain to us what are the practical or the differences in the kinds of cases the Superior Court, which is one of the two Commonwealth public courts, have versus the Supreme Court? So, because I personally find Superior and Supreme in my head get a little...
It's very confusing.
The Supreme Court is the highest court in Pennsylvania, which is what you're running for. You are now on the public court that's just beneath that.
Yeah.
Would be fair to say the second highest? I don't know, Commonwealth.
So we have two intermediate appellate courts, and they're the Superior Court and the Commonwealth Court, and they're very different. Mm-hmm. So the Commonwealth Court has a very limited jurisdiction. They hear government cases. And the thing about that is, I have all the experience that the Commonwealth Court does too, because as a Court of Common Pleas judge, I've done election law and I've done labor law. And as a lawyer, I've done real estate law. So I've dealt with every area of the law. I'm the only one running that has. And on the Superior Court, you have the absolute right to appeal if you're not happy with the judge below did. We don't have any discretion to say, no, I'm not taking your case. You have the right to appeal. And it's criminal. It's civil, big medical malpractice cases, class action cases. It's juvenile cases, orphans court cases. And the other thing that people don't realize between the family and criminal, we also do the wiretaps. And so it's a very specialized thing that just the Superior Court does. The difference between the Supreme and the Superior Court's the busiest appellate court in the nation. You cannot compare it to the caseload in the Commonwealth Court. It much surpasses that. And the Supreme Court, most of the cases come from the Superior Court. The statistics are clear. Most of the cases that go to the Supreme Court come from the Superior Court. But they have the discretion, the justices, on what they take. And they may take about 500 cases a year. So you don't have the absolute right to appeal to that court because there are so many more administrative duties that I don't have as a Superior Court judge. Supreme Court justices are in charge of every courthouse throughout this Commonwealth, also appointing to boards and commissions. So the administrative duties are just as difficult as the cases that they hear.
Oh, I'm so glad you said that. I'm learning a lot.
Yeah, I had no idea about that.
I had no idea. And I also think that administrative part of being a judge, looking back, but from talking to other judges, you know, I realized that it seems like judges have a fair amount of latitude around, you know, like where we are, there's a drug court that's been very successful. We've heard about other people who've done a lot with was Judge Dumas, you know, working on trafficking issues. So, you know, were there things from what you were doing? So you were a judge of Court of Common Pleas in Philadelphia. Were there things from that you feel like you're going to bring into now the Superior Court in your life? But in terms of like running the court and administration?
Sure. I mean, like, there are so many things that the Supreme Court is doing right now. My dad and my husband are veterans. They were veterans. And so veterans issues are really important to me. I like the treatment courts, veterans court, drug treatment court, mental health court, because when I did criminal work, there were very few criminals before me. There were a lot of people who needed help. And those diversionary programs were their savior. They were mine because certainly you don't want to lock somebody up.
They also save money.
That doesn't need it. That really needs help. And we're very fortunate in Philadelphia and many other counties to have these courts, but they're not all over the Commonwealth. That would be something that I would be a champion of. Not only veterans courts, but all of our treatment courts. There's also an autism initiative, which is something that the Supreme Court has right now and they're working on. And that's something that's near and dear to my heart. My husband and I share an adult daughter with special needs. We have two grandchildren that are autistic. And so not only do I bring my personal experiences with that, but my professional experience. So there's so many things that I could do if I have the privilege to serve on that court.
Yeah, I'm assuming you're going to win. But, Taylor, I had another question kind of looking backwards, but do you have something?
No, go ahead.
So, you know, it seems to me and you know, so you know, I mean, some of the listeners, like I said, I'm on my borough council. I'm also a police commissioner. It's not a very big department, but, you know, the whole experience of the George Floyd uprising and Black Lives Matter, you know, I'm a little bit chagrined, but also I feel like it's important to say, like, it really opened my eyes to looking more deeply, not just at the surface level, but at, like, kind of what we might call, like, the practices or the institution of policing. So, for example, you know, what are the training standards for police? The law was passed in Pennsylvania just last year, you know, that created a database so that departments know which officers have had problematic disciplinary things. And I look at that and I'm like, are you kidding me? That seems like the least first thing we could do, right, to make sure that problematic officers aren't being sort of passed around. So I read recently, you know, you might not have had a chance to see this, but there was some research done that was basically looking at, starting in the 80s, how often were deaths recorded as deaths where the police were at least involved, if not the principal cause. And so it almost doubled the number of people who, you know, it's not saying that necessarily the police were the direct cause of the death, but at least they were in police custody. So something was coded as a heart attack and they left off that it was a heart attack while they were in a chokehold or being handcuffed. So with that as just sort of, context or pretext, like, do you think there are things on the Supreme Court you can do that might address some of those deeper issues about how our justice system, like, systematically, like, may have been letting down citizens, and especially Black and brown citizens?
I think that as elected officials in general, it's very important, and we're obliged to give back. You know, just because we're a judge, there are certain things that we're not able to do as judges, but it doesn't mean we can't be part of the community. I, along with a number of female judges, go into female prisons 1 month before the prisoners are ready to be released. We bring jewelry and clothing and teach interview skills and how to get custody of your children back, because we don't want to see anybody go back into jail. And I think when they see judges, female judges, doing this for them, they see us in a different light. And so I think all of these things are very important. And I think, yes, as a Supreme Court justice, we should look into these things. And I think I also bring that unique perspective. I'm the only one that's running for Supreme Court that was actually law enforcement. I was law enforcement. I carried a badge my entire 29-year legal career. I have the respect of the police. I respect the police and they respect me. But I also know I am no wallflower. Everybody knows that I have a voice and I'm not afraid to, you know, say what I think and to help those in need, because I can always see two sides of it. And I think that's what everybody wants. I have always had the support of groups that are opposite, but I'm the one that can bring folks together. At least you can talk to me. At least I can talk to both groups, because we're in such difficult times today. And I see the difference just in the 4 years that I've run statewide, that we're in just a different time in so many ways, partisan number one, but in so many different ways. And so, yes, I do think that as a Supreme Court justice, there is things that I can do to bring attention to things. I am so proud to be running on the ticket that I am with four judges. If we're going to go to an appellate bench, you should be a judge. I know you're not required to, but boy, it helps. And I'm proud to be on a ticket with two women of color. We don't have women of color, just one on the whole appellate bench. So I am so proud to be on a ticket that I'm on. And I do think that as a justice and as a judge, we have an obligation to speak up for anything that's wrong and to make it better.
And that's Judge Nichols, just to give her a shout out, who's the one.
My friend and colleague.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. She's a good person. So I know you maybe can't answer this directly, but I just want to dig a little bit more. I think the reason I brought up the relationship between how debts get coded and the legal system is because it's the kind of thing that I think it's important that you know that a judge is someone who has the intellectual honesty, let's say, or clarity to ask the right kind of questions. And it would seem like from the little bit I know about the kinds of the court running court, which is an appeals court, you know, to ask that kind of question. So, you know, like the thing that's interesting to me about that is it's easy to say, like, well, look, you know, this person didn't die because of the police, because the evidence, a piece of paper, it doesn't show it, right? But that's not necessarily all the facts. And so I know for myself as an elected official, again, at a very low level, but I often have to make judgment about which expert is right. The engineer says this thing, about streets evidence is this thing. So, you know, can you speak maybe about how your experiences, you know, your temperament sets you up to be the kind of person who will be open to like how our knowledge as a society evolves? Because like what we know about institutional racism, I think changes. And I think that should affect the law.
Absolutely. And I think that my experience as a trial judge, the only one in this race that was a court of common pleas judge, I'm the one that has the knowledge and the ability to do that because you're a fact finder. Remember, when you're an appellate judge, you're not revisiting the facts. That's not our job. Our job is to, it's an error correcting court. We are to correct errors. We're not to weigh evidence, reweigh evidence, or anything of that nature. So the fact that I was actually a fact finder at one time makes a difference. You know, in the Court of Common Pleas with criminal matters, not just on the Commonwealth Court, hearing a certain amount of cases in a very particular area of the law, I was a trial judge making those decisions. And so I think, yes, that's something that definitely distinguishes me from my opponent, but also prepares me for the Supreme Court.
Yeah. And sort of going off of that, I kind of want to switch gears and ask about your opponent. And I know you're not able to say anything negative about him, but you're running against...
But we can.
We can, yeah. You're running against a guy that's primarily funded by both the Republican Party and by a super PAC funded by a billionaire. And that's in finance. And
billionaire with a B, right?
Yeah. Billionaire with a B, yeah, that's in finance and is funding all of these really right-wing efforts to, like, you know, do all these things, like funding Doug Mastriano.
Pushing that all the schools need to be open without any COVID safety, right?
Yeah, all of the bad things that are happening right now, I feel, in many ways. And we will link to this article in Penn Capital Star in the show notes. But I just wanted to ask you, like, in what way do you think, what are the biggest differences between you and your opponent in your background and what you would bring to the bench?
Well, one of the biggest differences is just what you just said. I don't have any billionaires funding my campaign. When you see my campaign commercials, they're going to have paid for by, you know, Maria McLaughlin, not paid for by the Commonwealth Leaders Fund or the Chamber PAC or big business. I'm the opposite of big business, right? I come from humble beginnings. And even though I'm a judge, you know, I make sure that my kids know, you know, what hard work means. and, you know, what, how important it is to give back. And I know that, you know, that's why I have a son who went into the Peace Corps in Zambia, Africa, because he saw what I did, and I lead by example. And so I think that's something that's very different. I think, you know, when we graduated from law school, just our paths, my opponent went to a fancy law firm, and I went to the district attorney's office and chose to serve and fight for kids for $24,000 a year. And then I worked my way. It's almost a natural progression for me to the Supreme Court because I was a prosecutor. I also did defense work when I left, and I did real estate work. And then I went to the Court of Common Pleas, and again, was a trial judge before I'm an appellate judge. So I think, you know, our backgrounds are very different. And I know that my opponent, you know, all the time mentions his father who was a trooper and his grandfather that was a cop, and extremely admirable. I have all respect. I don't have my parents. My mom sold perfume. I'm the only one that's actually earned law enforcement support firsthand by being law enforcement, by choosing to serve and carry a badge and make $24,000 a year when I could have went to a fancy law firm. So they're differences. They're just differences, because I always say, you know, what my parents did for a living is just that. We're not applying for an Ivy League school.
I mean, it's a nice thing to say, but it's a little bit like, you know, my father was a physician. Do you want me to operate on you?
Right. I mean, well, I don't call anybody when I make my decisions. I don't call anybody to say, hey, what should I do with this case? My decisions come from my experience. And I'm the only one that has the experience that's necessary. I don't know, but I would want a judge who's done every area of the law before they get to that place where they have to do those areas of the law, right? I don't want to have to learn when I'm there. I just, like, if I'm getting operated on, boy, I want them to have done that surgery before they're doing it on me. And so, I mean, it just makes sense. And that's the difference between our backgrounds.
Yeah. I mean, and I think in many ways, like, you talked about your career path in terms of like a natural progression in terms of service. And his is very natural as well. Following a
different path.
Different path. Yeah. So Jordy, should we ask about the Supreme Court now? Should we move on? So Jordy and I have been asking people.
I almost want to throw you under the bus and say this is your question.
It's not my question. We've been asking people, what do you think is the most consequential U.S. Supreme Court case? And we know you're not allowed to comment on the Pennsylvania court.
We asked it because we were hoping it would be a way to kind of understand judicial philosophy without you having to say it.
I mean,
we understand that you won't rule on Supreme Court.
There's so many. There's Brown versus Board of Education. Look, the justice that I most admire is Ruth Bader Ginsburg. By far, always will be. For so many different reasons, that she broke glass ceilings, that she did things that women just weren't able to do, didn't have the guts to do, whatever it is, her entire life. Also was never afraid to actually be a woman, like never afraid to say she took care of her husband, changed her law school for her husband, which didn't make her weak. It made her wonderful, a wonderful wife, which we should be, and supportive. I have a wonderful husband. When people call him Mr. Maria McLaughlin, he loves it. He thinks it's hysterical. And so, I mean, to be the Supreme Court, the cases that she's ruled on, all of those cases that give equal rights to everyone, they're the most important to me. You know, women didn't have the right to vote. You know, there was slavery before some of these cases. There are the cases that are very important to me. And if you want to talk about like a judicial philosophy that I would have, well, that's it. Those kinds of cases that show equality for everyone.
But do you think there should be a maximum amount of fringe on a judicial robe or like a dormant? Do you think she went too far?
Look, you're talking to,
I'm kidding.
I had blue hair for one of my oral arguments on the Superior Court. So there's no too much for me.
I, if anyone, you know, it's out there, but, you know, people, I don't feel, you know, like, I have a PhD, and my robes are from my Spanish university where I went. And They are insane.
Do you have plumes?
Tape. Yeah, I have this orange cape that, you know, I have this octagonal hat with tassels. It's really
that's fantastic.
We should do a podcast sometime with me.
I went to Lund University in Sweden, which is actually one of RBG's alma maters as well, actually.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So is that what makes both of you communists?
Oh my gosh. But our academic regalia is actually a tuxedo with tails and a top hat.
Oh, that is nice.
Yes.
I mean, horrifyingly, mine literally dates from like inquisitorial judge robe. So I researched it.
It's a little too much. Yeah. So we do have one game. It's called Judge This. We like to play it here with candidates that are running for office. And the idea is that it shows judicial temperament.
The stakes are very low.
Bring it on.
Okay. All right. We'll start, I guess, with just easy one right off the bat here. Star Wars or Star Trek?
Wars.
Okay.
Interesting.
Very good. Very good. Jordy, this is the famous question.
Is it about this versus this?
And the associated.
All right. Yeah. Okay. Here we go.
You're teasing me.
Yeah. So, as you've run, we have to get people to sign petitions. Do you think that the petition should be laid out in portrait form, long ways, or landscape? Should they be changed to landscape? Currently the portrait, but should they be changed to landscape? Because we think that there's more room.
I have to agree. Landscape would be much easier for folks.
Wouldn't it?
Yes. Second, shouldn't the Pennsylvania government agency that runs elections and other documentation, shouldn't it be the Pennsylvania, not the Department of State as it currently is, shouldn't it be the Department of the Commonwealth?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Well, you're fast on your way to the Barnstorming PA endorsement.
Hall of Fame. Yes.
Yay.
So now we're going to ask about good favorites or best TV shows about the law. So
shows about the law. Oh God.
Yeah.
Which we've discovered that maybe most lawyers and judges don't watch or like. But go ahead.
I actually did. Oh my God. But it's not because of the law. Okay. I can be superficial, right?
Yeah.
I like Suits because I like the women's clothing on there.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
I also like the show a lot, but I love the clothing.
I don't think I've watched Suits actually.
I haven't seen it, but when we were researching in air quotes, it came up on sort of top five lists.
It did.
Of quality.
I don't think you could
be accused of being superficial.
So our question is, Better Call Saul or Law and Order?
Oh God, Better Call Saul by far.
You're the first one to even know what the show was. I had to explain it to people.
How do you not love Saul?
Yeah. I've actually also, because I do listen to a few podcasts about the Supreme Court, people will say this show is actually pretty close to, like, the law is pretty good in that show. Do you agree with that?
I do because, Breaking Bad was the one before that, right? That's where Saul was.
Yeah.
And I preferred Breaking Bad, but I did love Saul. And yeah, I think if I'm thinking back, I haven't watched it in a while, but yeah, I think it was pretty accurate. Some of the things. Yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah. Our next question is
I hope not all of it for Hallie. Not all of it.
They're coming out with a new season soon, actually.
Taylor, if you want to start a new podcast of Better Call Saul, just go do that. Okay, don't stop stepping on our podcast.
Okay, all right. You asked the next question, Jordy. It's about.
I'm not sure if I know what it, which one
it's about the non-heroes.
Oh, okay. Yes. Right. Okay. We know that you know part of this. So in terms of TV shows that elevated the anti-hero, is Tony Soprano a more interesting anti-hero or Walter White from Breaking Bad?
Tony Soprano.
Mm. I'm not sure there's a wrong answer.
Yeah, no, but I mean, Tony Soprano is classic.
You know, I did have somebody recently say to me, oh, you know, you look a lot like Tony Soprano. And I was a little bit like, it's one thing to say I look like an actor, like Kendall Heaney, but I was like, I remind you of Tony Soprano? Like, I hope not. Like, did I whack your sister? I mean, I was like.
Can I say that now that you're saying that, you do?
Yeah. I was trying to go for Walter White. But
it took me a while, you know, because of my Italian heritage.
Yeah.
To be honest, it took me a while to really like that show and appreciate that show. First, I was like, I'm not watching that show.
Yeah.
And I got addicted. Then I got addicted.
Yeah.
Love it.
Were you a person that watched it when it first came out, or have you gotten on the bandwagon of, you know, the most recent wave of people that have gotten interested?
When it first came out, but I had a problem with it when it first came out. So I would watch a show and then get mad and watch another show. And then I talked to some friends and then I realized I loved it.
Yeah.
Well, the psychiatrist, she's Italian American too, isn't she?
Oh God. And she was awesome.
She was, I mean, that's part of some of the best.
Oh, absolutely.
Do we have any more?
Oh, yeah, we do, actually. It's okay. A food question that you can do.
I don't remember.
Oh, okay. Altoona pizza or Pittsburgh salad?
Oh, God, Altoona pizza. There's no salad for me.
Oh.
Really?
I'm a terrible eater. You're finding this out. It's going to be a whole for your podcast, but most
folks Pittsburgh salad is not a, it's not even really a salad.
Now, Taylor, you have to admit that you didn't even know what it was until I explained it to you.
I didn't.
What's a Pittsburgh salad? Because I'm constantly in Pittsburgh.
Salad is a chopped salad. And then it has French fries and sliced, flat iron steak on it.
But it still has lettuce. I don't eat green.
Okay. That's not good for you.
Except in soups.
Okay.
I'm very strange.
All right. Interesting.
The greens I eat are only in soups.
Hmm.
Interesting.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, I think you might have been the first person to say Altoona pizza. Spurgeon said the Altoona
pizza. Yeah, but I don't feel like his heart was in it. I feel like he was saying that because he felt like he had to since he's from
Pittsburgh.
My heart's in it. It's always never, never salad.
Okay.
But still vote for me. Still vote for me.
Somewhere the Iceberg Lettuce Association of Pennsylvania is writing a check for your
donated $10,000 to Kevin Brodson.
I have a son who's a chef, so my house has every ingredient all the time. It's just not
one. And he can't get you to eat your greens. Now, you know, sometimes one of my side hustles is a chef, so I'm actually fascinated with this. I mean, were you subjected to overboiled vegetables as a child? Because I can very much understand that makes adults not want to eat vegetables.
Well, no, I just think that I was a terrible, I'm a terrible eater. I like junk food and I just was never a big vegetable eater.
So we'll add one more then.
Okay.
McDonald's or Burger King?
I like Burger King's ice cream, but McDonald's burgers.
Mm. Okay.
The fact that I even know the difference between the two ice creams should be the absolute reason you vote for me.
Okay.
I mean,
what's your McDonald's order?
Yeah.
You know, because you get the thing, but then you get a little something on the side too.
Because I, you know, try to watch my intake, I get a kid's meal sometimes or just a cheeseburger and fries. And at Wendy's, I love the Frosty.
The Wendy's Frosty.
Fantastic.
I think part of it is because I think probably the original recipe was meant to replicate like a chocolate malt, like it's got some malt in it.
I love it.
Yeah, and that's malt shakes too. This is going to become a food podcast if we don't.
Yeah, get your own podcast, Jordy. So how can people follow your campaign?
Well, I think my website, judgemclaughlin.com, because I have an announcement video there. We were not able to have a big announcement. I was so disappointed because we were in the height of the pandemic. And so in 2017, I had this big announcement. I was on the Capitol steps in the rotunda. And so this time I did announcement video and it's on my website and it's in English and Spanish. And so my son can do it for you in Italian if you want or need, but my website and my Facebook. And, you know, look, if you're on my Facebook, you could really follow me. I try best as I can to say where I am, not every single time, because I still have a full-time job. You know, they don't give us a leave of absence to campaign. And, you know, I took an oath and I make sure that my job is first and foremost.
And I'm sure, you know, it's a little bit odd too. Like, I think on your website, if people want to support you, they can, and I would encourage them to.
Because these campaigns don't fund themselves.
They don't fund themselves.
Yeah. And we know you're not allowed to make that ask, but we can,
and we
thank you, the listenership. Thank you so much. Is there anything else you'd like to add, Josh?
No, look, thank you so much for taking the interest in this election, first of all. I am so grateful and really just want folks to take a look and, you know, let them make the decision who they want as their next Supreme Court justice. But I will end with this. You know, I have the ability to make history, the only one to make history. With making our Supreme Court, people get so hung up on the numbers of Democrats and Republicans. And I always go when I talk, I care about one number, 4. And they look at me like, what are you talking about? 4. I want there to be 4 females and 3 males. It's never in 300 years. The Supreme Court will be 300 years old next year. Never in 300 years has there been a majority female. I want to be able to show my grandkids, especially my granddaughters, hey, look, that's what the Pennsylvania Supreme Court looked like when your grandmom was on there. It's something that, boy, it would be an awesome gift to Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
About time to show everyone that we are equal, all of us. And let's start with the Supreme Court and the females, because we have to go. We still have a far way to go. But boy, it's in the right direction, if you ask me.
Beautiful. Well, thank you so much for your time. And
thank you, Judge McLaughlin.
We'll look forward to seeing you on the ballot this November.
Thank you very much. See you later.
Bye, everybody.